Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Buffalo Bills, maybe next year, a podcast that is recording pretty quickly after the last one because we have no intention of being late in this locker room environment. My name is Frank.
I'm Scott.
Sorry, guys. I'm Paul.
Just Paul's going to be sent home. Well, Paul, okay. We would send Paul home, but he's between homes at the moment. So,
yes.
So where is Mike? Nowhere to send him.
Yeah, man without a home.
I was going to say the only podcast where we get paid $75 million just to show up.
Just to show up. Not even on
not to win, just to show up.
The other intro I thought of, had I been leading this, I was going to say something along the lines of the podcast where we hope – only two of three of us get concussed before the conclusion.
Right.
Since that was the Bills quarterback issue du jour yesterday.
What's the total team salary? Because really, that should be the how much? $158 million.
That's Mayweather's paycheck, yeah.
Right. Oh, man. Well, we appreciate you tuning in when this podcast drops a little bit early in the week, but we all have sort of some commitments this week that we're going to, you know, stop us from recording in a few days. So we figured why put off the terrible talk now until now? The Buffalo Bills.
But our love of you, the listener, means we are going to plow through and get in our weekly podcast as we go up to the season, and also our desire to get back on page one of the Google search results. So
indeed. If you did not listen to last week's episode yet, please do. I feel like it was one of our stronger episodes in a while because we're getting back into full season form. But on to this week, speaking of things that were in mid-season form, the Buffalo Bills are in a middle of a 3-13 season form here as they go 0-3 for the preseason. They lose to the Baltimore Ravens 13-9, a last-minute drive going very well for TJ Yates. Unfortunately ends in concussion and loss as a terrible fumble near the end. I tuned in after the movie I watched ended for the final drive, as I was telling Scott, and then today I watched the first half at a more leisurely pace. So I did watch the game, and I think Scott did too, and I think Paul did. So and this is the third preseason game. This is the one you're supposed to get all the information from. And if that's what we have to look forward to, man, oh man, this is going to be a stink fest. I will just start by saying I found very little redeeming about this game. I suppose you could once again say the defense looked all right. I think even a defense that looks all right, if they're only getting this kind of offensive production by about week five, is going to be exhausted. And so I wouldn't expect that to last. But we can get into the particulars. We've got concussions. We've got people getting sent home. But I want to start with Scott. Scott, I know we talked about it last week, but I also know you were focused in on the offensive line this week.
I mean, how could you not? I mean, at this point – It's the old thing. Like if you hear the offensive line called during the game.
Hold on, wait, sorry. False start. If you could just restart your point again.
Really, actually, exactly. And Paul, you're gonna need to move back.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I was not lined up with my keyboard.
Yeah, you're a little too close to the microphone. Please take a step back. Anyway, not to interrupt this wonderful train of thought you had, Scott.
Yeah, I'm about to get first down on that comment. I didn't watch the Eagles game, so I can't say that that's one of the worst things I've ever seen, but I mean, that was one of the most hideous shows of kind of incompetence in general on offense I've seen in a while. I mean, McCoy looked like he was basically struggling to get back to the line of scrimmage both plays. The pass rush, obviously, for the Ravens, like, I mean, this idea, like, in theory, it was kind of like, oh, well, I'm glad we're getting Deion Dawkins kind of warmed up to get in on there on left tackle. And then you see him go against Terrell Suggs, and you're just kind of like, oh, no, this is a terrible idea. This is never going to work. Oh, boy, what were we thinking? And that's really the plan if Cordy Glenn can't go, because, again, he had an injection, so he should be fine. Wood, who we just gave the extension to, which we'll talk about later, in addition to missing some blocks on some rushes right up the middle, he clearly failed at his job of being the communicator and leader of the line, because there were plenty of times when there were free rushers coming in the middle. The Vlad Dukas experiment continues to go as poorly as ever, with him missing some easy plays. John Miller looks slightly better, which is not saying a lot. And then Mills, Jordan Mills on the right hand side on the right tackle again, completely. I mean, freaking Richie Incognito had, I think, two holding calls, had at least two or three penalties called at him, and he's clearly the best guy on the line. So not a good line for the night for the line anyway. But again, like Juan Castillo, who's supposed to be pretty good offensive line coach that we were getting with coming from Philly, you know, they ended up, that was the guy who ended up being a defensive coordinator for a while in Philly because they thought he'd have something to add there. That was when they had the, you know, the million-dollar defense or whatever it was. But that was an atrocious showing. And you know, we can talk about the receivers and everything else, but if we don't get the line fixed, then I don't think it doesn't matter who we have playing quarterback or who we have running the ball. If the line doesn't get fixed, the team's not going anywhere, and the team will give up. I think Frank makes a really good point on the defense side saying, you know, those guys are going to get gassed. And honestly, based off how last season went, you know, or I want to say last season, maybe two seasons ago, I guess it was the Shim Schwartz era when we still had a good defense, you know, they just kind of give up, you know, if they feel like they're not getting the support. You know, given the amount of character guys like Marshall Darius we have on the defense, wouldn't be surprised if that happens again. Anyway.
Ooh, kicking the nuts before we even get there. All right. I've just drawn.
Yeah, well, if Marcel Darius wants to come down here, I will definitely retract all of my comments. Totally worth every dollar.
Paul.
Oh, holy.
Thoughts on the game, and then we'll go to Darius and quarterbacks.
Yeah, no, on our podcast, too, you know, the great thing, even with Scott's false start and, you know, me lining up incorrectly, didn't throw off our flow at all. That has no impact at all on what we're trying to accomplish here. That was the
good coaching.
Yeah, boy, what a – this was just an unpleasant game to watch. I was so excited. Excited is obviously a blatant exaggeration. I was so looking forward to sitting down, watching this game through, tweeting out some great observations. When did my first tweet come in this game? About 5 minutes into the second quarter, just for the sake of tweeting. There was legitimately nothing except Tyrod's injury of note in this game. So, you know, stop and go, no pun intended, with the false starts. And there was no flow offensively. The defense, as Scott noted, you know, they're going to run the risk getting gassed during the regular season. If this is the offensive performance, you know, we can look forward to. And while we've talked before in the past, it's preseason, it's small sample sizes. You would hope that there would be one tiny small sample size, like, oh, yeah, but they did this thing correctly that one series, that one game. And they still could not accomplish that this game. Mind you, they did have a phenomenal touchdown drive against Philadelphia's second string when Buffalo still had their first string in there. And phenomenal was obviously another exaggeration. So it was really concerning offensively. I think the plan for the regular season, anytime they pass, is to roll Tyrod or whomever, just roll everything out to the right side. Just keep rolling to the right and throw the ball within 3.5 seconds before whoever the turnstile is on the left side gets beaten so badly. He can at least, you know, or put a chair there, make a defensive end have to go way around, or the linebacker go way around, something. Because this was really just a deflating performance, because you just hope for that one thing you can kind of take out of it and think, okay, well, there was a positive sign there. There was some progress. And instead, it was like watching some of the worst regular season games of the last 15 years. So it was a frustrating, frustrating game, unfortunately, to witness.
It really was. And to have it be the first game this year that I've sort of sat down and watched as much as I had, it was really disheartening. I think it's hard to get around it, too, because I think a lot of times you have the excuses. It's the preseason. It's this. It's that. But, you know, like, penalties are, like, offsides and illegal formation and false starts, like those are things that like don't really change. Like, it doesn't matter if you're not running your usual playbook, right? Those things are just errors that are happening at the time. Like, you're supposed to count to five and then move, and you can't count to five to move, or you don't know when to count to five to move. So that's really frustrating for me. I think the other thing is the mistakes and the issues that were sort of holding the team up can't be attributed to the fact that Tyrod Taylor wasn't behind center, because he didn't look very good to begin with anyway. And I think that left side of the line,
he did have a yard passing.
He did have that one yard. But I mean, even that on that left side, like, what, there's only so many times he's going to be able to take off himself. Yeah. McCoy was really unable to do anything.
You talk about the four fumbled snaps or the
yeah,
You know,
I'm just talking about all.
I believe everyone recovered a fumbled snap. Correct? No one.
I don't think we lost a fumbled snap, but we did have a fumble at the end of the game, and we had
with Brandon Riley.
And you know, to hear the chimes for Peterman for the last 2 weeks, and then to watch him play. Really, there was some cognitive dissonance, as far as I'm concerned, because I saw nothing, and I think I'll just use this as a way to launch into our quarterback discussion. Tyrod Taylor went down in the first quarter, or the early second quarter. I can't quite remember. I think it was the first quarter. The third drive or second or third drive. He went down hard, and his back of the head hit the turf. It didn't look like a terrible hit to me because it was kind of a rolled hit, and then he hit his head. But he was taken out for a concussion, and honestly, I had turned off the TV by the time that Yates had been concussed. I saw the fumble, and the moment that happened, I turned it off, and I had no clue that he was concussed, leaving Nathan Peterman as the only quarterback who – you know, despite he's only been playing with the twos and he'd look better if he played with the ones. Well, he played with the ones and he looked pretty fucking terrible. He managed to throw to a couple of wide open bills very nicely. He threw behind a couple of wide open bills very nicely. He threw into the hands of a defensive lineman no less than two times. I think three. One of the just boneheadiest interceptions I've ever seen in my life. Now it's preseason, he's a rookie, but to me, like, these seem like things that, you know, you would learn quickly or would have some sort of sense from college having played, like, you know, the interception where he's got six guys draped on him and he's trying to complete a pass. I'd understand that, like, okay, maybe you need to throw that interception to learn not to throw it again. But I don't know. He was not precise. The only thing I can think of is he stands in the pocket and Tyrod Taylor runs. And that's the politest way I can think about why people might prefer him over Tyrod, because I saw nothing that at all was enjoyable about his performance.
My theory is because Tyrod is because he's not the guy. Tyrod's a guy. We used to say this about Tyrod when Manuel was the guy. We said it about Edwards when Lawson was the guy. Like, oh, give that Edwards a chance. And then after about 10 to 15 games of Edwards, like, you know, JP wasn't too bad. Why don't we put JP back in there? So
most popular guy on the team.
Yeah.
Like a quarterback.
I saw a tweet and it tried to highlight his one great throw on a slant pass. Peterman's one great throw on a slant pass right there, caught. I'm thinking, okay, one great throw on a slant pass, that is not what makes Tom Brady Tom Brady. He does that routinely. And here we are celebrating this like it's a big deal. Like, he made a good pass in the course of looking largely terrible throughout much of that game. And I'm not saying Nate Peterman never has a place in the NFL at any point in time. I'm just saying don't saddle your hopes on this guy to lead you to the promised land of the next coming seasons. He looked like a mid-round rookie QB, which is fair because that's what he is.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's it. I mean, I think it's, I don't want to come down on him too hard because it's putting too much expectations on him that shouldn't be there. You know, you can't let how terrible Tyrod has played affect your admiration for the backup, and in this case, Peterman. You know, I think part of the reason you cheer when you see Peterman complete a slant pass is we've seen Tyrod miss slant passes this preseason, and it's kind of like, well, at least he could do that. And I kind of see a little bit, you know, I think I read a good, I think it was on like Buffalo Sports page or something, is talking about like Dennison and the offense and how, you know, Tyrod has proven that he can win you eight games with a decent offense, and maybe able to do more if the defense is able to pull its own weight, if the system is correctly designed for him. This system does not look at all like it's designed for Tyrod Taylor. He doesn't look comfortable to me running it. He looks like he's trying to, like, we're trying to pit the square peg in the round hole. Peterman, I would just say, based off his accuracy in those short-term, mid-term passes and his willingness to kind of get out the ball on like 3 and 5 and 7 step drops, it seems like he's a little bit more designed for it. So maybe that's, I mean, I assume that's why they drafted him, and I assume that's why he's in there. And that he looked good. Hopefully, once the regular season rolls around, A, Tyrod will be healthy, and B, they will use, they're trying to use the preseason to make Tyrod figure out how to run this part of the offense. And then once the regular season runs around, this will only be one part of the offense. There will be rollouts. There will be more play action. There'll be more deep throws. I don't know who they're going to be to. But in theory, I'd like to believe that's how it's going to work, because I agree with you guys. I mean, Peterman looks he looked okay for a backup quarterback. He didn't look like a guy who's I'm expecting to wrestle the job away from Tyrod.
Yep. Sorry.
Do you have any Yates thoughts that we want to share? Because I don't.
Shouldn't be on the team.
Yeah, that's it was a you, Scott, who posted yesterday that the Bills could have four QBs, but none of them should be TJ Yates.
Yes.
He looks really good for about a minute into the 2 minute drive at the end of the game.
And he did the same thing in the Eagles game. And yeah, he was great that last drive, and then it ended with turnover, and then that was that. That seems to be the pattern, though the turnover in this case, of course, not his fault, as AWOL Nation would remind us.
The subheadline of a Buffalo Rumblings post, it's Bills down to one healthy quarterback following Ravens. And then the original subheadline was, is Colin Kaepernick available? And there's a line crossed through it, and now it says, that was a joke, guys, geez. So now you're allowed to revisit your, you know, at this point, like, you know, if Tyrod's out for an extended period of time, and like, I don't think, again, my stance on Kaepernick hasn't changed from last week. If you have two complete quarterbacks missing now, like let's say they both are not available for a while, I have no problem with bringing him in, because I think he is, you know, like it makes sense now, because if there would be
They're just that thin.
Right, you're just that thin a quarterback now, and yep. So
there's. Did you guys see Thad Lewis last night?
Yeah, good to see Thaddeus back.
Fourth quarterback for the Ravens. Yeah. He's probably available in a week.
He will be, yeah. If not soon, maybe we can swing a conditional trade where if he makes the team, the Ravens get a draft pick. I don't know. And if he does make the team, the Bills give the Ravens, you know, a bag of footballs. Maybe two bags of footballs.
There was a soccer player that got traded for $600 in sausage. Like it was like he got traded for meat.
His in-kind deal. Yeah.
Right. It wasn't very kind to him.
It's the barter NFL economy.
Of course, right. let's be, we could explore this further. What kind of meat? I mean, this makes a huge difference here. Are we talking a porterhouse? Sure. Are we talking Spam?
If you got someone like 100 pounds of like prime Kobe beef, like that's probably worth like $1 million or $2. Like probably.
So there right? you go.
I mean, I don't know, but it depends on the meat. Exactly. Like if it's just, you know, deer carcass, then yeah, we're probably not gonna work that much.
Goodness. Well, let's talk about the elephant in the room, but really it was the lineman not in the room. Because not that Darius is an elephant, but certainly is a lineman.
Although TV Johnson used to call him the Auburn elephant or something like that. Am I remembering that correctly? Was the Crimson Elephant because he went to Alabama, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and Alabama sort of uses a
that's for the Crimson Tide. That's their kind of unofficial, official mascot for their. Doesn't make sense in the context of Crimson Tide, but yes.
Yes, well, Marcell Dareus got to the game late and was sent home, and was not allowed to have dinner or cookies, and had to go right to bed. And also, like a real part of the story, was not allowed to fly home with the team. Had to make his own arrangements home. So
I'm hoping he has some cash. I don't know if he's made any money in his NFL career, so I hope he didn't have to Uber it, you know.
Yes, Paul is definitely Zoolink. But
That's okay. We'll talk about it, and then you can come in and pile on in a second. Let's go to
jokes about it, because I think he can afford the Uber ride for one.
Yeah, and all the way back to Buffalo.
If the guy can't figure out how to get to the game on time, do you really want to put him on his own recognizance to get back to Buffalo?
Like, well, they did, and he got there. So
I mean, good. It just seems like that's the exact opposite. Like you'd want to supervise his return so that he makes it to the facility on time. It's clearly he has trouble with basic human scheduling. So.
Right. Well, let me try and take his side here for a second. Okay. Like
that's a risky move right there.
You're still Zoolin, man. I'm sorry.
I'm gonna restart. It's nice talking to you. I'll be back.
Yeah. And turn off your video too. So that way that might help. But okay. So let me put it to you this way. Every story certainly frames this with his two previous suspensions for basically the drug violations, and you know they've called him a quote unquote distraction and stuff like that. And drag racing in Buffalo, like certainly, like you know, he is not the poster boy for Sunday school. I'm not pretending that. But I, you know, is there for me? The only thing I found problematic was that they came down very hard on Marcell Dareus for being late to the game. And truthfully, I don't know how late to the game he was. He got there at 5 o'clock, 2 hours before the game starts. And my research has shown that players get there anywhere from 2.5 to 4 hours before. Every team is different. So whatever, you know, his rule is, maybe it was supposed to be back 2.5 hours. To me, there's a much bigger discipline problem with like the 400 penalties that have been called in the preseason. and I feel like it's not really fair to sort of single him out as somebody who's struggling because he got to the game late when literally everybody else on the team is a failure in regards to on the field stuff. Now, you know, certainly a rule is a rule, and if you want to be authoritarian, and that's the rule, and really that's the only thing that Marcell Dareus has to do today is get up and get to the stadium, so I get it. But I don't know. I feel like I need more context before I can really sort of, you know, cross my fingers at him and tisk tisk. Scott, you're generally the most authoritarian, although Paul...
I'm perfectly willing to tisk tisk.
Okay, good. Then tisk tisk away.
I will as well. So we're going to gang up.
Oh, good. I mean, I was going to say between the two, I was going to say this.
It's a gang tisking.
Yeah. When it comes to this kind of stuff, you guys are very authoritarian and rules are rules. And I tend to be a little looser, but you know,
there you go. I will say, yeah. I mean, I think I get your points on the kind of the lack of accountability that's being shown on the, you know, the offensive line, for example, like who's getting fired on the offensive line, who is, you know, being docked. I think you make a good point about the context. We don't know how those things are being settled. Like is the kangaroo court, you know, fining these guys $1,000 for every formation penalty or, you know, false start in practice or on the games? Like, is there, you know, are people's, you know, is there like, you know, McDermott just brought in the officials last week, so I think that's part of the problem or part of the way that they're trying to address some of the penalties. But I'd also say that, you know, there's what you're doing off the field affects what you're doing on the field. And I also say this, I don't know, obviously don't know all the details. Like, if you're Marcell and you're really, no kidding, like, you know, your driver never showed up or you didn't have a, you know, and your phone got destroyed somehow, you know, figure out a way to make a phone call, figure out a way to call ahead and tell people like, hey, I'm sorry, there's been this incredible series of events. I don't know what happened. You know, I don't know if that happened or not, but so if it didn't happen, that would lean me more towards, yeah, you kind of didn't make it to the game on time. You kind of need to do that. You're a professional. So I think, and part of this also, I would also put down to the Marcell has to be a leader, not a, and this is something we talk about a lot, Pastor. He has to be a leader. He has to be the one who is trying harder than everyone else because he's making more money than everyone else.
Yeah.
So he's the one whose example has to be set. And if he's not setting the example, you need to make an example out of him. And hopefully those kind of things will roll downhill. Now, you're right. There isn't enough context to make a full judgment, but ultimately I think when you take it in the context of everything else, yeah, it's kind of hard not to be like, yep, this sounds like Marcell was, you know, otherwise occupied and lost track of time, which isn't exactly, yeah, which is maybe I'm jumping to conclusions, but yeah. Ball? I don't know.
Yeah, what Scott said is going to be essentially my reply on this one. So, you know, as I looked through this, I was actually reading the transcript of Dareus talking to the media about 2 hours ago, which I think is what caused the Zulian issue that we were facing a little bit ago. So now I've opened it on my phone, so as not to lose this.
Yeah, just blame Dareus for that too, Paul. It's fine. Yeah.
It's always Marcell's fault. But I think about this, I have, and to give some context, you know, my right hand at work, good at the job when she shows up, but late almost, I've had to formally counsel this person multiple times for being late. Management, you have to set an example for the rest. You are the authority figure in that role. He is the highest paid player on this squad. I don't think that's up for debate. I don't have the salaries right in front of me, but on Over the Cap last I checked, he is. He is expected to be your defensive leader. He is now a veteran, if I'm correct, because this will be his seventh season. He is on his second contract.
He's 27. He's not a 23-year-old, second-year man.
Right.
27 years old. And you read his answers on some of these media questions. Why'd you get sent home? Me and McDermott had a discussion. We're on the same page. We're just going to continue to move forward about it. So you're okay with everything? I mean, me and McDermott, me and the coaches, we all spoke. And then they just kept going on in these sorts of answer non-answers. And they asked, what he says there's going to be a plan toward the future. And they said, what is the plan? He's like, man, that's asking me the game plan. I can't give you the game plan. So it was, and even like, this is not the sign of someone who, can you imagine Fred Jackson stepping in and saying these things back right. in the day? I don't think he would. Or Thurman Thomas, Jim Kelly, to go way back to the good old days after once they got to their late 20s, the BS really stopped with them in the late 80s. Once the 90s came around, they were much back on the same page. So, he's at a point in his career where he is expected to be that example. He is the person that everyone on that team looks up to. And yes, there are no doubt, and I'll be the sympathetic guy here, personal circumstances in his life that I'm sure we don't know about. We do know about some horrifying things in his past that he's had to deal with. Mm-hmm. At the same time, there are plenty of people who go through those things and find a way to handle them in a way that doesn't affect their employment. And his employment, mind you, is pretty significant based on the value. The Bills can legitimately not cut him for what, three seasons? They can't cut him this year, next year, the year after without significant penalties. So he is
on this year. I think it's this year and next year it becomes almost manageable.
And then after
that. Next year they can trade him and it's moderable and or tolerable. And
it's moderately tolerable, otherwise known as
precise. It's still not good. This year they literally can't. If they cut him, they have to cut other people to accommodate for the dead cap space. But after 2 years they could. Getting a release or whatever.
And this is one of those guys I feel like, McDermott and Bean would move on from if it weren't so detrimental to move on from him. So it's really not acceptable, and you're in the position he's in to have this happen. As Scott said, there are phones you can pick up. You can send a text. If you can't find a phone because your phone is dead, you can find a pay phone. You can
stay in a hotel.
Actually, I'm not sure you can find a payphone anymore, but yes.
But that's a good point. If you're in a hotel, you can use the front desk phone. There are pigeons outside hotels. Put a little memo on one of them. Go see Coach McDermott, and pigeon will
Baltimore's go. Baltimore's not that big of a city. Just take a big jog. I'm pretty sure you're going to be fine.
Send a raven, right?
Yep.
Just send a raven.
Quote the raven, nevermore be late.
Yes. So I will say that's the most bothersome thing to me is that his job is limited in scope in regards to, what it is. And it really does boil down to a handful of things. You go to camp, you do this. You go to work, you do this. You show up at this time. And it's one of those things that it's the little things that sort of kill, I suppose, is the part that I find understandable about certainly the frustration. And I feel like sitting him might have been appropriate as opposed to sending him home, but I'm not Coach McDermott, and he's certainly going to run his team the way he wants to. I'm glad to see Darius spoke to the media today and didn't seem like he was like completely sulking or anything like that. And I'm glad to hear that Coach McDermott's sort of gonna, yeah, he said something about a clean slate, which I suppose when you have this, $187 billion albatross about around your neck, you better just get on the page of having a clean slate with him. I think he'll get beat up tomorrow on Monday on the talk shows. I think that there are plenty of people who sort of have disliked him for a long time that will continue to, I'm certain that seven or eight people will be calling for him to be cut tomorrow without any context or the fact that literally it would mathematically not be possible to do that.
I like how Coach McDermott also subscribes to the Gavin Rossdale approach to discipline. It is the little things that kill. So if this were the first time too, it would be a different sort of story, but the fact that we've been down this road with him.
Well, it's the first time he's been late as far as I know.
Remember he was late for team meetings. What was it? 3 years ago. I want to say it was
Right,
and he got suspended for the first suspended. It was, benched the first quarter of a game. Then he was late for teaming the next week and had to be benched the entire first half of the finale, I think, against the Patriots.
And I'm pretty sure Rex may not have been too tough on the discipline, seeing as Rex was probably short about 20 minutes
per game. Yeah, I think that's some of the other thing, too, is that they're trying to – I think that was in Lock and Fora's tweet that, like, curb this loosey-goosey kind of attitude towards things. Yeah. I really am not making excuses for him. I wanted to make excuses for him to give him the most charitable view to sort of flesh out the conversation here. But really, when your job is to be there on time, and that's the like you're in Baltimore, you got there last night, and the only thing you have to do right is get to the game at X, and they're even going to give you a bus. Like, you got to get there. you got to do it. You got to get there. So disappointing. You know, hopefully it just won't be something that I gotta, you know, that people will want to talk about forever. Like it's like a mortal sin or something, but certainly an issue. So we've talked about Darius. We've talked about the game. We've talked about Tyrod, and we've talked about Peterman. We should talk about the Eric Wood extension.
That's what that is. I thought we had a new sponsor in Viagra. I just saw on the agenda wood extension.
Wood extension? Yeah, yeah. No. It's actually for my deck. I want to build out my deck a bit. I need a little more wood. Let me just pull up wood extension. It's for 2 years, and I forget how did they say how much money it is? $16 million in new money?
$16 million in new money, and I think a lot of it was guaranteed too, so good for Eric.
So 31, that gets him to the 2019 season. He'll be 33. So that's a good contract really for both teams, for both ends, because Buffalo is, you know, getting him into his early mid-30s and then can reassess how long they want to keep him. But Wood is one of their, you know, real success stories out of first round picks, I think, in the last, obviously, you know, seven or 8 years.
Yeah.
It says a lot that your steady one-time Pro Bowl center is the hit. You know, when you look at all the others who've missed, but yeah, I think, I didn't mean to jump in and go first necessarily, but I'm a fan of this move. It's kind of funny. We were all talking about how just last week, I think Scott and I were doing the Hangartner Wood comparisons. They know Hangartner center, and then Wood slid back into that role, and now they're going to do the same thing with Groy and Wood. Now that Wood's getting older, well, apparently that's not the plan. You know, apparently they're going to put, you know, with maybe Incognito's contract coming up after the end of next season, maybe they're looking to slide in Groy there. Obviously, they have problems on the other side because, you know, they've tried Ducasse, they've tried Miller, and nothing is working again. So, you know, I'm a fan of this. He's a good leader. You know, the fact that he went up to Aaron Maven in their second season and said, "Why don't you give back some of that effing money you haven't earned yet?" You know, for coming from his fellow first-round pick of the same draft class. You know, and he's an outspoken guy too, but not in the way that he says stupid things. He will just, you know, come right out with what he's thinking, what needs to be done better. He's not an excuse maker. And, you know, above all, I think his performance has been there. You know, we don't talk a lot about Wood really missing a block or not making the right line call or being crossed with his quarterback on a snap. Of course, those things have happened over the course of a decade.
All those things happened on Saturday.
Yeah, all those actually happened for no matter who was in at center on Saturday. Yes. Roy had a snap on the last drive that I think was about a month early, and I called for a false start. Thank God he did, or that would have been like a 20-yard loss rather than $5 and five yards no loss of down. So, I'm a fan of this extension, and the fact that I think what speaks volumes too, and then I actually let someone else speak on this topic. What speaks volumes about this sign to me is Wood was drafted way back in the Marv Levy Geron era. You know, and he survived many years of coach. He got re-signed, I believe, right at the end of the I think during the Marone era is when he got re-upped, and now he's gotten re-upped again by yet a third regime. So obviously three different regimes have felt he's a quality football player to draft him or give him a new contract. So good for Eric.
I guess I'm a little bit I'm not quite exuberant about this, I guess. I mean, ultimately, yeah, I mean, he's a good player. You know, he's kind of right on the borderline of like a really good center. You know, he's kind of, you know, I just looking at his contract, you know, he's right now, he's basically the 10th highest paid center. You know, this might bump him up to like 7th or 8th. You know, that's getting a little rich for my blood for Eric Wood. I mean, I think I want, when I want a center to be that important, like he really needs to be, like Wood definitely has it in the leadership side because he's clearly a team leader and stuff. But I think at the same time, I would just, and the other thing I'm, I guess this is also in addition to the question of when we were re-signing Ryan Groy and giving him that qualified offer sheet, or when the Rams signed him, we had to match him, and we matched him. I think the assumption on a lot of people's parts was that that was setting Ryan Groy up for bigger things later going on. And now I'm kind of confused why we're paying so much for a backup center or interior guard, but we're also not trying Ryan Groy at guard when we clearly have a gap. So I guess I'm a little bit confused as to what the plan is kind of long term, for, you know, kind of center guard issues. So I guess that's the thing that gives me the biggest pause, but ultimately it's not like we signed, I mean, Groy, I think we signed for like $3 million a year or something. So it's not like it's a break in the bank. So I'm not too put out by it. I think Wood's good enough to hold on to. I think he's good enough to be, you know, if he's the weakest link on your line, you're fine. So, and it, the problem is he's definitely not, he's definitely, you know, within the top three, top two when Glenn's hurt as he is now. So that's it.
Good. Dissension. We like dissension.
It is good. It is good. Let's, you know what? Let's go to this day in Bills history.
All right. Oh boy. We have,
we'll talk about right of the blooding of Bills Lions, but go ahead. Yeah. Well, the final spring summer sacrifice.
Yeah. We have a rich tapestry of things that happened. Mind you, I just looked at the last 15 years. So anything before 2002, something amazing happened on this day. Please feel free to tell me. So we'll go back to just to mention a few things, some of which we'll laugh at hysterically. Let's see. It notes, this was the day that Bills veteran offensive lineman Jerry Ostrowski announced his retirement. Remember Jerry? A steady guy in the mid.
Center, right?
Yeah, center. Speaking of centers, we had a very good transition there. So he'd been with the team about 7 seasons, I believe, at that point or so. You know, and they decided to, he says, my mind and heart still say play, but my knee says no. So he retired on this day 15 years ago. And now looking at some of the other interesting happenings on this day, we only have to go back about, let's go back 6 years to 2011. This will all just depress the hell out of you, so why not? Trent Edwards trying to carve out his own legend in Buffalo. That's a USA Today headline on this day. Bills turn to Roscoe Parrish for offensive output. This is just to remind you of how sad things have been for so, so very long. So those are some of the 2010 headlines.
These are pretty brutal. These are not fun. I'm not enjoying this. I mean, it's good. That's the thing. I mean, I'm sure there are probably fan bases out there that could like go back, but that's the thing. Like another fan base could go back, you know, 10 years ago and be like, oh, you know, John Kitna liked to lead Bengals to playoffs. And, you know, I think he may have even gotten them to the playoffs 1 year, but that's the thing. They would have gotten to the playoffs since then. Like that, or Browns team, like, you know, they made the playoffs at some point recently. So all of these things failed.
Yep. There's one. And boy, it's funny you say all these things failed. That what happened 6 years ago, Tavares Jackson traded to the Buffalo Bills. That did not work out very well.
John Kitna won playoff game for the Cincinnati Bengals. He lost to Pittsburgh 31-17 in 2006. Also, was when he was with Seattle, lost a game to Miami 20-17. Playoffs. 2000, Seattle, Miami in the playoffs before Seattle moved to the NFC. So there you go.
Wow.
There was no Seattle Miami Super Bowl. So.
Ryan Fitzpatrick aims to recapture magic for Buffalo Bills. That was also on that same day of the headlines that were going on. So,
this is a big day for a terrible quarterback.
It was. Oh, and Bills released quarterback Vince Young.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember he was a Bill for a minute. Yeah.
He was?
Jesus. He was a preseason Bill.
Yes.
Which I was told doesn't really count, but I think counts. I think if you were on the team, it counts at all.
Mm-hmm. It was the same day they also released Nick Suke, who I remember we used to make fun of his name, and of course, David Clowney, question bro, he was released too. So all of these non-event events, the one headline that really stuck out at me most, I only went back 2 years for it. This is the actual headline. I don't even know if I want to give any more details. IK Enigpelli hit man who he thought was woman after arranging sex, per report.
He was a bill then, or was he a just
he was a bill then. He was a bill at this point in 2015. The New York Post outlines that,
and that was not Geno Smith, right? Like that was
right. This was not Geno Smith. Although it says, IK Enigpelli punched the imposter paramour in the teeth so hard that he injured his hand and had to miss an opener because I guess the event had happened back when he was in college, and it just came out on this day. The racy details of Enigpelli socking the man he had met online as Missy Lee were outlined in the police report obtained by the website, which stressed Enigpelli was not charged in the incident. Again, this is a New York Post story. I'm essentially reading from verbatim right now. Enigpelli was cut by the Jets after a locker room fistcuff with Smith. Began exchanging Facebook messages with Missy Lee in 2011. Missy Lee offered to perform, I'm not going to say this, an act on the gentleman if he came to her house.
He offered to perform a Kiko Alonso jersey-worthy.
Yes.
Type well, action.
There you knew exactly where that was going.
Yeah.
And so, Enigpelli entered the house through a side door and saw inside a figure covered head to toe in a blanket. The person removed the blanket or turned on the lights. And Enigpelli said he felt uneasy about the situation. So Enigpelli also still Missy Lee persisted, enticing the player to come back inside. When a cell phone in the room rang, the screen lit up the room enough to see the person under the blanket had facial hair, the police report said. Enigpelli also realized another person had entered the room. He felt he was being set up for a robbery of some type. That's when he struck Missy Lee in the face hard enough that his hand needed surgery. Enigpelli said after he struck the person, their voice changed to that of a male. And Enigpelli hopped out through a window and only alerted cops after Missy Lee texted, "You are going to jail," and demanded $1,000, a police report said. And that's this day in Bills history. I'm looking forward to the regular season, guys.
Outstanding. Actually, and just to be – what I didn't realize until you were reading it and I looked at the story myself was that actually happened in 2011, right?
It did. It happened in God.
It came out this day that like that had happened right. In 2011.
Yes. Well, this was when he was at Louisiana Tech. But that was the news story of the day in Bills land.
Holy cow. So I just went to the Bills team store to shop online briefly. And I went to the clearance jerseys and because I wanted to see if the Sammy Watkins jerseys were on sale, and they are. But the EJ Manuel jersey, Nike home game Buffalo Bills jersey, I want you to guess how much that jersey is. Typically $100. How much is an EJ Manuel jersey right now?
I'm going to say it's still, I'll say 65.
65.
Oh, I thought I was being generous by saying 35.
35. It's $10.
Wow.
You can get it in blue or white. You can get it in the Nike away, in the Nike throwback games bill jersey number 3 manual. There's also the $35 Mario Williams jersey, which I'm so glad you didn't buy that Mario Williams jersey. In the store, Scott, that day.
Yes, no, that's true. It was coming down to the two of them. Yeah,
I thought you chose Wiley.
The Fred Jackson. Yeah.
Percy Harvin's jersey is $50 and Manuel's is $10. That hardly seems fair.
That doesn't make any sense.
That makes no sense. Wow. I think it's worth $10. Manuals, I think.
Do you have a manual already?
No, I don't have a manual. But I think, and I'm sort of off that, where I, you know, longtime listeners will know I had a plan to collect every Bills quarterback jersey between Jim Kelly and whoever the next good quarterback is. But I say a $10 jersey is worth it on the off chance that they sign a quarterback who takes number 3 and is good.
Yeah.
You can just change the nameplate, and for $10, you're in the
Yeah. I just went to NFL shop hoping to find a Jeff Toole jersey, but it's out of stock. You yeah. can't buy, hysterically, a Jeff Toole is my homeboy Buffalo New York football sports t-shirt for $20, twice as much as an EJ Manuel jersey.
That's insane.
T-shirt of a Jeff Toole jersey.
That's insane. And I think that as poor as EJ Manuel's time here was, it's not $10 jersey poor. And that's pretty – I frankly find that insulting.
I think you make a good point, Frank, and I'm just going to put this out there. Highly touted Josh Rosen, junior quarterback for your UCLA Bruins, number three.
Is it number three? And he could be in the mix next year. So there you go. Well, all right, I got to think about it now. $10.
They're giving it away. They're begging you to take that.
They're literally like, just please buy an EJ Manuel jersey.
It's not worth the warehouse to store it in.
Right? I can't even imagine. Which, by the way, they're selling this for $10. So how much does it cost to make a jersey?
Could we get a field trip? Wouldn't it be awesome if we knew someone in like the Bills shop organization to go to the warehouse where they have these?
Right. Could we save money by just going there ourselves?
Yeah.
I'm just walking around, like going through the boxes and like going through and like finding like a, you know, a Willie McGahee jersey from like, you know, 06 in that terrible color pattern. Like, wouldn't that just be like just walking through the history of the, that'd be so.
It's like we have 500 leftover Derek Schumann jerseys. Really thought.
If you're wondering, tied
up in the future.
If you're wondering, there's 8 ratings and 1 review on this jersey. It averages 4.5 stars. The jersey review says, "I love this site," from Ian in Jacksonville, Florida, from 2013. OMG, this is the greatest jersey ever. EDAR. I'm sure you know. Now, look, if you're not a jersey fan, Buffalo Bills T-shirt, EJ Manuel player name and number royal, also $10. So, you know, you don't have to, you know, decide which is best for you. $10 gets you in the EJ Manuel game today.
The Jacksonville guy, probably a Florida State fan. We'd have to assume, correct?
Perhaps. Yeah. I just want to know, what's it going to take to get you in an EJ Manuel jersey today? What if I throw in a warranty?
EJ Manuel ever comes. Wait, do you get a share in his stock if you buy that jersey? Remember he did that? Remember he sold part of his future earnings on this like player stock exchange thing? Do you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Maybe you offer the person, give me $10, I'll give you a Kiko Alonso and an EJ Manuel jersey. And I don't mean a Kiko Alonso jersey.
If you buy part of his future earnings and he flames out of the NFL and goes to sell insurance, do you get some of his insurance money?
I feel like I have to tweet this from our B-Bills MNY. Go
right ahead.
And add a little poll that says, is this worth it?
I think so. Anyway.
If you would like to respond to that tweet, you'll be able to find it. You go to BBillsMNY on Twitter, at BBillsMNY. BBillsMNY.wordpress.com is our WordPress blog where you can find our podcasts. We also have a Facebook page, which is probably the hub of what we do, facebook.com/BBillsMNY.
Although Steven did ask us to make sure we post the link on the WordPress page.
I did. That was my fault. I added the link to the WordPress page. It now updated. If you were subscribed to the feed, it will have now popped into your feed. But feel free to go to the Facebook page or the WordPress site, and you can get the podcast there. It's set, and that was my fault. I forgot to include the link. But it is all set there. And that's great, because if we forget something, you can just yell at us on Facebook, or you can email us, bbillsmny@gmail.com. So Twitter, email, Facebook, WordPress, podcast. Give us a good rating on iTunes. Let a friend know you about us. We should listen. We've got 1 week left here. It's the annual end of the summer, right, where the Bills and the Lions play the most meaningless preseason game in the history of preseason football games. They do this every year. And
to be fair, the Bills and Lions play their fair share of meaningless regular season games against each other, like one every 4 years.
Precisely. Paul, do you just give me a score and who will play the most snaps at quarterback?
All right. I am going to say Bills 3, Lions 27. And I'm really going to go out here with this one. I think Icky Woods is going to play more snaps at quarterback. I think not only is he going to come back and play, he's going to play quarterback instead of running back and really just make a difference. So that's a little out there, I know. But honestly, I don't even know if it's considered shocking at this point with the way this preseason is going.
Scott?
Sorry, I was guffawing at something else, which I'll raise with you, good gentleman, later.
Okay.
I will say that the Bills will defeat the Lions. by the score of 300-4. And what was the other question you asked?
Oh, who will take the most snaps at quarterback?
Joe Montana.
Very good. That's a good one. The score is going to be 3-0 Lions. and E.J. Manuel is going to take the most snaps at quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. He's coming back, guys. That's what this is. It's getting on the ground floor now.
If we followed to see how he's doing in Oakland, I know Gillislee's struggling a bit in Patriots land.
Yeah, I have no clue what E.J. Manuel's doing, but we'll look it up for next podcast. I think. That up. Well, thank you all very much for listening. It was a great podcast. We will talk to you next week after the Lions game, where we will give you an AFC East preview, a season preview. We will get ready for the NFL actual season. We'll talk about the Jets game, the 1 week for about 8 weeks that's going to be any fun at all.
It's the chance. If they don't go 0-16 this year, guys, this is that chance.
Right.
This is that game.
Right. And if they lose this game, there's a good chance that they're going to win two games all year.
On the table.
So, okay. Well, until such times come to pass, my name is Frank.
I'm Scott.
I'm Paul.
Good night, everyone.